This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne. And
yes,
thank you
sir.
For joining us. And this is the place where we talk about things that affect your life here in the Mid-Valley. Sometimes we're talking about initiatives and institutions like nonprofits and government. Sometimes we're talking about movers and shakers, investing in the community or doing nonprofit work that affects us. And today we're going to have what might be my favorite guest ever. And I think as much as I enjoy this guest, the listener's going to enjoy this guest, we might get written demands to have this guest back on.
Wow, yeah. That's impressive.
She is that impressive. She's that important. So in the studio with us today, we're going to talk about raising kids. We're going to talk about education, especially early childhood education, ECE as it's known, because everything has an acronym.
Right.
And whether your kids go to public and private school, all the mistakes that we're all making as parents. So we got a listener out there who's a parent who's like, oh, what do I do about or how do I prevent this mistake? So I brought in a professional. I brought in the region's paramount professional in this industry.
Okay.
I just happened also to be married to her. So in the studio with us is our guest, Linda DeHart. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi. She's like, what do you want me on the show for? So like, well, I've learned so much from her over the years. And her talents, and I believe in God-given gifts, right?
Sure.
They are a separate set than mine.
I hope so.
Yeah. And I'll just, you know, learn so much about raising kids, educating kids. I'm still learning, even though maybe I'll be able to use them with grandkids. All right. So if a couple things on Linda and why she's here. She's a teacher. She teaches early childhood education at the Montessori Discovery Center.
Yeah. Right.
Been there a while. And you've been teaching since the early 90s.
Yes.
So we try to discourage one-word answers. So
I want to say how long I've been working.
And the other thing is she hasn't just been teaching all these years. She also teaches Love and Logic, Parenting with Love and Logic, with her partner, Jean Rawlings. She's a facilitator. It's very popular here in town when they're doing a class. It always fills up. But also worked in social services, worked for Family Building Blocks, worked inside a church and helped found a preschool.
Wow.
And later a kindergarten and came in and out. So,
okay, she's got impressive credentials.
Yeah, yeah, she does all right. So,
I have a first question. What is loving logic? What is that?
What is it? That's what everybody asks. It's hard to put into a, you know, elevator segment, but it's called parenting or teaching with love and logic. And it's really basic parenting skills where you allow children to experience consequences. We get all the time questions about why my child doesn't listen or why my child won't go to bed and why my child has temper tantrums and all those kind of questions. Love and Logic actually addresses specific issues, gives you hands-on tools that you can use that night when you leave the class that day. And it's a little bit of empathy that you have to learn. So when Love and Logic techniques are being used, there's no lecturing, there's no punishment, but you kind of develop empathy for the child and come alongside them. So for instance, if they forget their jacket when they go to school, we'd be tempted to say, now you're going to be cold today and it's your own fault because you forgot to bring your jacket. I tell you every day and I don't know why you just don't. And we go on and on and the children just hear blah, 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 blah. So instead, when the child goes to school with no coat, you would say, wow, that's sad. You're going to be really cold today. What do you think you're going to do? And children learn problem-solving skills.
That's important.
Yeah, there's something, your brain goes in a certain state when you're in conflict.
Right.
And when you're in conflict, right?
Right.
Your brain's not able to learn with the lesson.
We always say to get the child out of brainstem mode because that's your fight or flight mode. And as soon as we start making demands and yelling at children, they go right to brainstem mode. And we say it's like arguing with a drunk. When they're in brainstem mode, there's not a lot of thinking that goes on. There's not cognitive processing. So we want to keep them in the frontal cortex of their brain. That's where reasoning and logic and thinking occurs. And to keep a child in that part of their brain, we have to stay calm. And we have to be in the moment with them. And that way, we're helping them learn how to cope with life. We're helping them think through the problem instead of reacting to the problem.
Because you said something that set some people off right away. I'm sure there's people yelling at their radios about not punishing the kids. You know,
right.
And that's not really... You're not punishing them like you're paddling them, right?
Right.
And you're not, it's not necessarily the grounding or whatever the punishment is might be the automatic go-to, but they are suffering a consequence.
Exactly.
There is a consequence.
That is a major topic in our class. We spend a whole night on the difference between punishment and consequence. And so a punishment is something that an adult does to a child. And a consequence is something that a child has to go through themselves. So a punishment is grounding the child or spanking the child or taking away some random privilege, whereas a consequence would be, you watched a movie that you weren't supposed to watch without my permission, so therefore we're taking away your movie privileges. The consequence is directly tied to the misbehavior. So it's a much more logical approach because parents don't know what to do most of the time, so they just ground their children or put them in time out, and that's very generic. And really, children just learn, when I get in trouble, I go to my room. They don't learn when I disobey my parents' rules, I don't get those privileges. So it's very, very specific.
Yeah, in some instances, almost semantics, because you're still, it's but how you're going about the communication of that child. It's like they did something wrong. And if we keep them out of brainstem, we can tie it to whatever it is that, you know, the price that they're going to pay for having done this.
So example, say the child watched a movie they weren't supposed to.
Right.
Would it be advisable to say, what do you think I should do as your punishment?
That is really appropriate. That's a great question, because a lot of times you can bring the child in on what should your consequence be.
Yeah.
I wouldn't start that when you're first starting your love and logic techniques. I wouldn't jump in with that, but you can get there. And a lot of times children are harder on themselves than we think they would be. And we have a story about a parent that had... the child played video games at a friend's house, and so he wasn't supposed to play video games at a friend's house, and she found out, and she said, well, what do you think the consequence for that should be? And he said, I shouldn't get to go to Jeffrey's house for 6 months.
Wow.
He didn't really know his timeline, but
well, they learned it quickly, didn't they?
They did. She said, okay, sounds good to me. And then the parents have to follow through with it.
Right.
The follow through is where we usually fall off.
But what if you're saying, okay, 6 months, you can't do that, but the child then breaks that? What would the punishment then be?
So they go back to the friend's house that they're not supposed to go to?
Right, like say a month later, they feel like it's been 6 months and it's only been a month.
Right.
And they break that rule.
Right. So the next step in that would be, well, what would be logical? Would be, oh, wow, I don't really trust you to leave the house without me accompanying you or driving you. It's too bad that I can't trust you to be outside the house.
There's the empathy.
Right.
It's too bad. That's sad.
Too bad.
Yeah. It's good. When you have empathy, it's harder for the child to argue with you. So when we yell at a child, they just think, mom is so mean. Mom's horrible. She's the worst mother ever. And they place the blame somewhere else instead of looking at themselves.
We're talking to Linda DeHart. I have the good fortune of living with this expert. And we're talking about love and logic, but also she works at a Montessori Discovery Center as a Montessori certified teacher. We want to get to that this hour. And hopefully we'll get to, if not, we'll have her back, some of the things that are age appropriate, developmentally appropriate. Because we parents, we're like, well, when should they be fill in the blank, right?
Right.
And it goes from when they're toddlers, when should they be walking, when should they be talking, when can they sound out letters, all the way to, well, when should they have a cell phone and what kind of things are brain development-wise, which are appropriate. So Linda DeHart here. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll finish up a little bit on love and logic. Hopefully you'll have a couple of tips for us. And then go into what the philosophy of a Montessori school is, how it differs than a traditional education, and some of the things parents can expect. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne and my good fortune in having in the studio today Linda DeHart.
Best half.
My best half, yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes experts are close to home.
Right?
Right? So many things, and we like to talk about newsmakers. That things affect our lives, and nothing affects our lives more than our kids and raising our family. And some of the things we've learned over the years. Linda's a teacher at Montessori Discovery Center. So she's a Montessori certified teacher. She's worked in social services, and we're talking about the concept. She's a facilitator of love and logic, parenting with love and logic. And we're talking about that before the break. She's done a number of classes with her partner, Gene Rawlings, here in Salem Kaiser.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of other facilitators in town. None as good, of course. None as good. I might be a little biased.
Just a little tad.
So love and logic has been around. There's books, and okay, how does someone going to access the knowledge and get an idea of how to utilize these tools?
That's a good question. It's been around for over 40 years. It's so easy now to access the knowledge. You just go to their website, loveandlogic.com. You can call their phone number. A real person will answer the phone. You can tell them what kind of issues you're dealing with, and they will recommend product for you, a book or a video, or they do podcasts, webinars. It's very easy to get on there. But the best way to learn love and logic is to take a class, because mm-hmm. you're with a group of people, and you go home and you try a new technique, and then when you come to the next class, you share it and you say, oh, I really messed up here, or this went really well, and then you can problem solve with the facilitators a lot better than you can with a computer.
So there'll be a facilitator, there'll be all these parents, and everyone's admitting what's going wrong with their kids, which is some comfort, right?
It does. They're all in the same boat.
None of us are perfect. Right. And then, it's either getting the kid to eat the vegetables or turn off the video games or do their homework or something.
I kind of like that idea because, you know, if you're parenting for the first time, mm-hmm. it can be a daunting task to try and you think you're worrying you're doing it right.
Right.
And you start talking with other people going, oh, let me try that.
Right. The first night they come to class, they're just quiet. They're afraid to say anything.
They're like sponges.
We'll think, my kid is horrible. And they start hearing other parents' stories, and the laughter starts. And like, oh, thank goodness it's not just me. And everybody relaxes and really gets into it then.
You never share any stories about our kids or anything, right?
No. I got permission from them before I shared their stories.
Oh, but certainly nothing about me.
No, I share good stories about you. You are a very good love and logic parent.
She said that in quotes, Brent.
I learned it from her. Mm-hmm. I learned it from her. So it's going to be, there's going to be consequence for the action. We keep them out of brainstem mode.
Correct.
Because we can't learn. It doesn't matter if you're furious with your girlfriend and you're in a high school classroom, you're in brainstem mode and you're not learning.
Right.
Right. And if you're screaming at your kids, I think is what I learned, they're not learning. They're going to suffer a consequence, but is it the way you want
to them, if you start yelling at them, is it like Charlie Brown's teacher? Is that what they hear?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what they hear. And all they're thinking is, I got to get away from this person. I'm going to my room.
And they slam the door.
They're such jerks, and they slam the door. They're not thinking about their behavior. They're thinking about what a mean dad I have instead.
There's so many, I'm talking to Dave here because he's kind. but there's so much in America, because I know Dave is aligned with me here, so much in America where people do not know the consequence of the actions.
Correct.
Right? And they're not taught. We're trying to keep them out of trouble. We're mm-hmm. trying to keep them from having consequences. And then they grow up and they don't know how to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
There's an epidemic of that happening.
Yeah.
And why do you think that is?
Well, well, you've heard the term helicopter parents before.
Yes.
Love and Logic actually coined that term. You can be a Love and Logic parent, helicopter parent, or a drill sergeant.
Yeah.
Either way, what your child learns is, I can't make decisions for myself. My parent has to make it for me. So whenever the child forgets their coat to go to school, then mom goes home, gets the coat, and brings it back. They haven't learned anything. They've learned that mom will always be there when I make a mistake, is what they learn. And we have a great example of this, a true story of a college student. We hear this more and more from college professors, too. He was late for his final exam, and he called his professor, texted him, and said, you know, it's not my fault. It's not my fault I was late. My mom forgot to call me and wake me up this morning.
Wow.
Wow.
True story. Yeah, we have quite a few like that. Could not get himself out of bed in the morning in college in the dorm.
And I'd be writing an F on that grade.
Yes.
Myself.
Yes.
F on parenting. All right, yeah. So there's a helicopter
parent.
No,
I'd be F for the student.
I know.
And the parent.
Yeah,
yeah.
And the parent in that one. Yeah.
So it's the rescuing helicopter. The helicopter's going to come to your rescue type parent, and you said there's a drill sergeant.
Drill sergeant is the one that's always telling him exactly what to do, how to do it, when to do it, barking out orders. And then what kids learn is, I have to listen to a voice outside my own head. So when they get to be teenagers, they're not listening to the adult parent voice anymore. Who do you think they're listening to? Their peers. So they haven't learned to think for themselves. So instead of they will do what their peers tell them to do without really thinking it through, because they've been trained to listen to a voice outside their head.
It's really frightening to have someone go into adulthood who has not made a mistake, right? Who has not been allowed to make mistakes. And we've seen some of that with our kids growing up, where the kid wasn't allowed to make any decisions. Well, you have to let them make mistakes.
Yes,
right? How else did we all learn things?
Yeah, you have to make not only mistakes, but you also have to win and lose.
Absolutely.
Because that's how life is.
Right.
And I think a lot of kids being awarded, you know, like the participation awards and stuff like that. I never got that when I was a kid. I learned to win and lose, and I know what it feels like. Right. So I prepared myself,
right?
You know, for life that way.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of kids are not prepared for that.
Right. We're raising adults that have a lack of coping skills. Mm-hmm. They don't have a memory band to go back to ask themselves, how do I deal with this?
Mm-hmm.
Can I give you another example?
Yep,
of a, this is a really, really drastic one, though. This happened in Oregon at a university here in Oregon. And there was a young student, and his whole life he had been raised to just get good grades. So had to take the AP classes, just get A's. He didn't have to do chores. He didn't have to have any responsibilities around the house. His whole job in life was to get good grades. So he goes to university, and after about 3 weeks, the parents get a phone call, and it's the dean, and says, we're having a little problem. We found your son naked, hiding in a bush. He hasn't eaten in weeks because he could not find the cafeteria.
What?
True story.
Wow.
It's the person that came out of high school with high grades.
Yes. Very good grades, very academic, but no life skills. That is a true story.
That is scary.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And okay, this is going to be kind of heavy, but we see an epidemic of suicides nationwide. We've seen it in our own community. Does it intersect, and not just that, but other mental health issues? I mean, not even that serious, but other mental health issues, social health issues. There's all the questions about the screen time and how much
don't
time.
Don't get me started on that.
We're going to. With screen time and this and that. Because, like, as Dave was saying, people aren't learning how to lose. Or they think they don't lose at some point, or that you can lose and not be a loser.
Right.
Or you can lose and still have a great day.
Yeah, because in screens and video games, it's reset. Do it all over
exactly.
again.
Exactly.
There's no consequence.
Right. Well, I used to, in my classrooms, a long time ago, before I was really a student of Love and Logic, I always would let the students win. But I don't do that. They do lose in my class, and we do deal with it on a daily basis. And I don't feel bad about it. So,
are there tantrums when they lose?
Sometimes. You can tell when a child comes to school, if they have been allowed to learn some skills at home or if they have not ever been able to deal with losing. Yes, you can tell right away.
So when you're talking about the relationship with the parents and trying to keep it out of a heightened state of conflict,
yes,
right? Is that fair to say?
Yes.
So you have to alleviate that contract and find another way about it so
right.
that they are learning and sorting it through and suffering a consequence.
Right. That's the hard part for parents is staying calm when something happens because your kids are going to do outrageous things and you're just going to blow. What were you thinking? How could you do this? But really, the hardest part for parents is learning how to stay calm mm-hmm. in the moment because once you've lost your calm, the kid wins. You're over. They can see your face turning red. They can see your blood vessels pounding, mm-hmm. and you've lost
right
there.
The terrorist wins.
Right. We don't negotiate with them.
How do you balance, and this is another thing that's out of whack. It's similar to what we're talking about, that parents have a life. The parents have a life and kids have a life, and they do intersect. But sometimes we get so enwrapped in the sports and the school and the home life and da-da-da-da that it's like we're not allowed a life. It can't
right.
be about the parents.
Right. We talk about that a lot in Love and Logic also. 85% of what young children learn, ages 6 and under, is from modeled behavior. So whatever the parents in that house or the teachers are modeling, that's what the child's going to learn. If you want your child to learn how to be a healthy young adult, remember we're raising responsible adults here, you have to model what that looks like. I take care of myself. I go out with my friends. I go to yoga. You have to do those things for yourself if you want your child to take care of themselves when they grow up. You have to model it.
Yeah, because they all look up to you.
Right.
Under age of six, but 85% of what they're learning is from modeling.
Correct.
Wow. That can be
scary,
damning for some
it?
Of us. Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about the philosophy of Montessori and where that came from. So stick with us. We've got Linda DeHart here in the studio with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN Salem's Listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we have in the studio today Linda DeHart, my one and only. And we're talking about early childhood education. We're talking about parenting. We're talking about the mistakes that we all make and some of the best practices that are taught out there.
And how to deal.
How to deal. Parenting is not for the faint of heart, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, we had parents who didn't necessarily know how to parent, and we had grandparents that taught them how to parent. And these things can really be recurring.
Yeah. Generational parenting.
It can be, right?
Linda's mm-hmm. resume, she did work in social services. It scares me to think I let her do this, being the protective husband that I am. But she used to go into people's houses that had cases with DHS.
Mm-hmm.
And then these families were in danger of losing their kids. They were in danger of losing their kids or were just getting them back and trying to help them get through the system and have, you know, what it takes to keep the kids out of foster care.
Doing that. Good work there, Linda. Mm-hmm.
So social services, family building blocks, first as a volunteer and later an employee. And, of course, at her own congregation founding a preschool that grew into a kindergarten and so forth. So early childhood education, one of the things that fascinates me the most is what can be expected of a child in this stage, this developmental stage.
Sure.
And we as parents, we're like, especially if it's our first kid, it's like, well, we worry too much or we don't expect enough or
yes.
we don't know when to intercede.
Right.
All right. Linda, we're talking about love and logic and some of the basics of that. We're going to have you back and talk about some of these things. We're not even touching on giving the kids choices. Yeah. We're not touching on how to phrase things. Like if this happens, or four children who behave this way, they,
right.
you know, they get this result.
Right.
And again, the goal is to have them think through it.
Correct.
Right?
And language is a huge part of that, is just changing our language around and making it less threatening to children and taking out the word if and when. If you do this, then I'm going to do that. And saying instead, kids who do this might experience this. So you take that threat out of your parenting.
All right. So even though you're nice and everything, we're really not promoting growing up snowflakes.
Yeah. Not at all. It's a joke. Sometimes we've heard from parents in Love and Logic that their kids will say, would you just spank me and get it over with?
Wow.
Because it is so much more powerful. That has been said. We've had parents who told us that their kids said, please don't go to any more of those classes. Because it's so much more thoughtful and long-lasting. A spanking is quick, it's over with, and life goes on.
Let me go get the belt.
Right.
Don't use Love and Logic on me. Just beat me.
Right.
Wow. That's pretty bad.
Holy cow. All right, folks. So let us know if you are interested in that. We'll have Linda back on to talk more about Love and Logic. Now, during this, go ahead.
No, you were going to promote what we were going to talk about, but I had a quick question. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, Brent, when was the appropriate times for, like, when should you ask the child what their punishment should be? What age would you approach that?
Right. So just a little back on that. A lot of our parenting frustrations come because we don't know where the child is developmentally. And we are expecting something that they can't give you developmentally.
Right,
their brain just isn't
think.
There.
Right.
Correct.
Okay.
Or we're expecting, usually we don't expect enough. We don't realize how smart they are. Love and Logic says that your toddler, your one-year-old, is smarter than the family dog. So if your dog can sit, stay, come, go, then your toddler can as well. So knowing where your child is developmentally makes parenting a lot more successful. So a two-year-old, you can expect them to say no all the time. They hear that word a majority of their day. They hear no all day long. So they're going to practice saying no. It's their job. A four-year-old is going to start lying. And
what?
It's not. Yes. Between four and the age four and second grade, it's developmentally appropriate for a child to test out lying. And no one wants their child to lie to them. But if you understand that their brain is working out what a lie is and what a lie isn't, that's what's happening, why that's going on. So it's really important to handle it age appropriate at that age.
Wow. Right. How would they learn that?
The kids or the
adults?
Well,
yeah. How would the kids learn that to either hide stuff from the parent or to lie? Just
right.
out lie.
Right. For instance, let's say they're 4 years old and they say they didn't eat all the cookies in the cookie jar, but the Oreo is all over their face.
Right.
Right? So you don't say to them, I know you're lying to me. You say to them, how are you going to replace those cookies that you ate?
As a matter of fact.
That's a consequence. They can't argue with
it's
that.
It's like, honey, you don't have enough money to replace all those cookies in the cookie jar.
What toy are you going to turn over?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, so there's a consequence.
Absolutely.
I like her logic.
Yeah. good stuff. There's so many things. There's so many different directions.
Sure.
One thing I want to talk about is the Montessori. When I first met Linda, she was training to be a Montessori teacher, and I didn't know what it was. But
so what is it?
It goes back to a person. Why don't you tell us about that and why you went down this route? And how is it different than people who are going to schools that are not Montessori-oriented?
Sure. Well, when I was a student in college in Southern California, I visited lots of preschools. I was always interested in early childhood development. And when I walked into a Montessori room, I said, this is different. I like this. The kids were so engaged and so focused and so concentrated that I followed that for my career. So Dr. Maria Montessori was the first female physician in Italy in the 1890s. And so when she went to get placed in a job, she got the jobs that no one else wanted because she was a female. So she was placed with the developmentally challenged children and the very impoverished, poor, underserved children. And she noticed that children really need to use their hands. They really need to smell things, feel things. They're like sponges. And so she started developing works that would feed the child's senses. So it was all about sensory input for her. And by the time, after about 4 or 5 years that she had been working with her students and developing her system of education, her first grade students were testing higher than the public school's students were.
That's impressive.
She became renowned at that point. So Montessori is based on individualized learning for the child. Every child learns at a different pace. We're not all going to love math at the same time. So when you see a child maybe who lines up everything that they get, they're developing their sense of order. So the Montessori teacher would pull out work or guide children to work that feeds their sense of order. Another child might be really into their letters and their alphabet and their sounds. So it's the teacher's job to feed them all the information they can. Maria Montessori calls it a sensitive period. And it's when that part of the brain is really firing. So you have to watch the child, see what they're interested in, and then it's the teacher's job to fulfill their needs at that point. So it's very individualized. The environment is, they call it a casa dei bambini, a home for the children. And so everything, Maria Montessori was the first one to say children need their own size chairs and their own size tables because she couldn't understand kids sitting in big chairs and their legs weren't hitting the floor. So, of course, they were wobbly and they were moving all over and not doing their work. So she put boxes under their feet and then they focused. They sat down and they did their work.
Revolutionary.
Right. It was 1890s. Revolutionary. It wow. really was. So the classrooms, everything is there for the child. The shelves are so that the children can reach everything on the shelf. Everything in there they can touch. There's nothing in there that belongs to the adult. It's completely the child's environment. It's very important in the Montessori classroom.
Do you find a lot of preschool philosophy now has moved to Montessori, whether they're calling it Montessori or not?
Absolutely. They call it developmentally appropriate preschool, and it's based on Montessori principles. It's exactly... There's copies of Montessori jobs in a lot of preschools. They just... it's not their fault. They just don't know that she developed it.
And jobs meaning the things that the activities that the kids do.
Right. We just automatically call it jobs because play is a child's work, so we call it jobs. But it's individualized activities. So they do everything from pouring sand back and forth in pitchers to learning how to sew, learning how to make sachets. And they learn all these very good practical life skills. And we use real glass and real silver, and there's no plastic. We use everything real.
So you said something about sensorial. That's a huge part of it, right?
And
you try to be married to and raise kids with this woman who thinks the kids should be able to touch, feel, taste, bang, break, and everything, right?
Yep.
But
yep.
It's a huge thing is what connecting what their little tiny physical bodies are doing with their brain, right?
Right, absolutely. They just, they're sponges. And so everything is new to them. Everything is fascinating. And we tend to take things away from them and say, oh, no, don't touch that. But maybe what they really like is the sound it makes when it hits the floor. So give them something that makes cool sounds when it hits the floor. You have to watch what it is the child is seeking in their behavior.
And make sure you have plugs in the electrical outlets.
Yes, yeah. they will find everything. Right.
We're going to have to take a break. I loved what you said about what the kids are learning like, but it's also not just their time in their development, but also the time of day.
Yes.
As far as what they're fascinated in at the time. All right, we're talking to Linda DeHart, my better half, about early childhood education, raising your kids. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about age appropriateness and what you can expect and not. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. Today is going to be going down in history as one of Brent's favorite shows and one of his favorite guests here.
No bias.
No bias whatsoever. Brent and Dave have in the studio here Linda DeHart, my better half and early childhood education professional, currently employed at the Montessori Discovery Center, affectionately known as Miss Linda. Which is funny because Miss Linda is not a miss. She's a missus, right?
Right. Yeah.
And she's not 22. Let's just give it that. But she is and forevermore will be Miss Linda. And a funny story, our kids, when they couldn't get her attention, but they do it, mom, 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 Right. Mom.
Right.
Mom. They go, Miss Linda. And then she'd turn. Right. Because she's true. Used to responding in her classroom.
Right.
I also like that in her classroom, kids are like, hey. And they, you know, they don't know her name yet. They're new. Hey. Hey, you. Hey, you. And she's like, she doesn't respond to that.
Right.
She's like, no, you're going to call me Miss Linda. So anyway, we have the famous Miss Linda. And we're talking about Love and Logic, Parenting with Love and Logic. We're talking about the educational philosophy of Maria Montessori and how it differs and revolutionized how we raise our kids and how we get them to learn. We're going to finish up on that. We're going to talk a little bit about age appropriate, what we can expect. Just before the break, I was talking about the Montessori, and you said they have to be, she wants to grab them when they're interested in something.
Right.
So there are jobs. What did Linda say, Dave? It was like, play is the child's work.
Job, yeah.
Work.
Mm-hmm. Job,
so yeah. All the activities are called jobs.
Right.
Right.
And so I got to tell a story. And it's your hour, and I appreciate you being here.
Probably have a good story.
But coming into her classroom is remarkable. I'm not saying that every minute of every day is perfect, right? But when I go into a classroom, there's like 19 or 20 kids, and they're all quietly engaged.
That's cool.
I mean, I'm looking around, I'm like, what the heck? I mean, there's no mayhem. They're all like focused and engaged. And sometimes you get that from parents too, right?
Oh, parents can't believe it. They walk in, they just absolutely cannot believe the quiet and the calm, because the kids are really concentrated and they're focused and they're getting that sense of order and they're feeling accomplished after they do their job. And the classroom is their little community. They all work together in there. We don't have a lot of social problems. We don't have a lot of meanness or hitting or any of those, because the kids are really centered. They're just really focused.
Because if they get mean, you just smack them, right?
No.
No, don't do that. That would not be right.
You know, we would discourage that.
Okay. Right? My mom always used to say when it was quiet upstairs, we were up to something.
Yes. Because you were probably busy doing something that you really liked,
that we weren't supposed to be
right,
doing.
Yeah. Right.
So when a child is really into, they're figuring out what the plant world is or the animal world is, or there's outer space beyond Earth.
Yes.
Then you're feeding them that material.
Absolutely.
Because that's when they're soaking it up. Not going, put that away, you big dummy. You know, we're going to do math now.
Right.
Or we're going to do letters now.
Right.
They hate that in school.
That's the whole, it's not traditional education. So you can give numbers and language to kids, you know, all 20 of them. Today we're doing the letter B. And you might get one or two that's really interested in the letter B, but the other ones are going to be looking out the window or trying to count things or looking at the fish tank, things like that, because they're really not interested at that point. They will be. Their brain will get there at some point, and you'll know when that happens. So we really focus. If a child's interested in the solar system, I would give them lots of things to go with the solar system, but we would be counting the planets and we would be labeling the planets and looking at the letters in the planets. And so it's a whole approach to learning. So they would be getting all the education. It would just be focused around what they're interested in.
If someone wanted to go in a career like this, we're trying to help the parents here, but somebody wanted to go to the career like this, where would they go for an education? What's their first degree or certification?
Well, it'd be great if most Montessori teachers have a four-year degree first, but not always. Northwest Montessori in Portland has a wonderful training program. You can also do online training programs. You can just Google the American Montessori Institute, AMI, which is where all our teachers are trained, and they will lead you to... There's several different methods for you to get your certification.
All right. So what in the classroom or even in your Love and Logic classes, what kind of problems do you encounter the most when parents come to you? What kind of questions do they have and frustrations are they having growing up
it's
or growing their kids?
Right. We get a lot of well, my kid won't go to bed on time, or my child doesn't eat very much, or they don't eat what I give them, or my child, the biggest one we get is they don't listen to me. They don't listen to me. They don't follow directions. That's a huge one. And so then when it comes time for parent-teacher conferences and I have photos I'm showing them and I'm telling them examples of things that their child does during the day, and they always say, my kid did that? Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. He never does that at home. And I'll say, yes, he did it with joy in his heart, and he does it every day. They just can't believe it.
The story you've shared with me about somebody, like there was a kid that, I'm making this up a little bit, like wouldn't come to the table, right? It didn't have table manners, wouldn't behave at the table, wouldn't come to the table. And then 2 weeks into Linda's training camp, Miss Linda's training camp, in September, the kid lines up to go to lunch. He has his box. He eats it in an order. He sits down. He, you know, everything. There's, well, this is how it's done here. So it can be different in the school than it is in the home.
Right.
And the difference is, you're going to be consistent.
Consistent, exactly.
That's kind of
that's a key. That's a huge thing, because parents are tired and you're dealing with your kid and you're trying to do the right thing, but they wear you down. So you say no 10 times to the candy bar, but on the 11th time you say, fine, just have the candy bar, because you're just exhausted. And so what you've done is you've taken two huge steps backward. Your word is not credible with them. They know you don't really mean it. And kids are smart. They know that Mom will ask me 5 times to do it, but when Dad asks me, I better do it at least by the second time. They can figure it out. And so the consistency is huge. A lot of times parents just don't have the endurance to follow through with the consequence. And so a lot of problems can be solved by following through.
Let's talk a little bit about expectations. Mm-hmm. We were talking during the break a little bit about what we can expect our kids to do at a certain age.
Right.
And sometimes we underestimate what a child can do.
Right.
I mean, my father in Iowa was driving a tractor in the field at 10.
Right.
We were aghast when we look at a 10-year-old that they could do something like that. So what are you finding? Are people asking too much of their kids, expecting too much, or not enough?
Usually it's they're not expecting enough. They don't realize how smart their child is and how each child has a desire to be independent. That's why they push against us so much, is because they want their independence. So they don't really understand that a child can put on their own coat, they can tie their shoes, they can take all their food out of their lunchbox and put it on a placemat, and then clean up when they're done with lunch at age 2.5. They can do this. So mostly parents do for the child what the child can do for themselves.
Wow, that's profound. That is a great lesson for all of us to expect more. I remember, actually, it was one of our friends that said, once a kid leaves middle school, there's no reason for us to be doing their laundry.
Oh.
Or maybe even before.
We had a teacher that said, 7 years old, start teaching them their own laundry. Mrs. J.
Wow.
Said that.
Wow, the divine Mrs. J. What a legend. Okay, wow.
And you might get a few loads of laundry where your white stuff turns pink, but...
Well, my mom did that to me.
Right. It's
called consequences, right?
Right, exactly. When you mix the reds and the whites.
So many things we did not get to today. We're in our last minute. Blended classrooms, concepts, all sorts of things that we wish we could hit. So we'll have you on again in a month.
Okay.
And
sounds
we'll talk
great.
About it, and we'll line up some of these things that we're getting questions on and things we didn't dive deeper into these things. Did you learn anything today, Dave?
I learned a lot.
Do you see now it's just...
And it explains a lot about you, too.
About how I know so much? Because I'm married to such a knowledgeable young man.
This has been Len Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.